Hey everyone, I'm Brielle.
And I'm Michelle, and together we're the Wine Pro and the Wino.
Each week we'll chat about wine and break it down to make it more relatable and easier to understand.
And we'll do it all with glasses in hand, so you know the pressure's off.
I'm the Wine Pro. I regularly teach wine classes and started my own wine consulting business, Viva La Vino, in 2017.
And I'm Michelle, the Wino. I love drinking wine and learning about it. So whether you're a Wino like me or a Wine Pro like Brielle, you're welcome here.
We share a common goal, to bring people together through wine.
So pour yourself a glass and let's get started. That was pretty solid.
I think that was pretty good.
Hi everyone, welcome to the Wine Pro and the Wino. I'm Brielle, your Wine Pro, and I am here with my pal Michelle, the Wino.
Hi, how are you today, Brielle?
I am great. How about you, Michelle? What are we talking about today?
I'm doing good. And today we are talking about hosting a wine tasting.
You know, one of my favorite things to do is to teach other people about wine. It's why we're here. I get to teach you, I get to teach everybody who's listening, and I get to learn the questions that you have so I can make my tastings even better. And everybody who tunes in, you included, can learn a little something about my nerdiness in wine.
I am so excited to ask you so many questions because although I would love to have you at every wine tasting I plan to host, I know it's not completely feasible. So I need all your inside tips and tricks. Obviously, I won't have your expert tasting and teaching abilities, but just as a beginner status, I want to know how I can host a wine tasting if I'm just hanging out with my friends.
Well, that's awesome. I'm here to teach you not only how you can host your own wine tasting, but what might be enhanced on that wine tasting if you bring somebody in to help you guide yourself through the tasting. And you've attended a couple of my tastings already, both virtual, unfortunately, because of COVID, but you've joined both a kind of open enrollment class where you buy a ticket and come along and sip with me. Mm-hmm. And then we also did a virtual wine tasting for your bachelorette party, which was awesome.
It was so much fun. It was a blast. And we all learned so much. Like there's so many little tricks that you threw in there, even like the bubbly cork, how when you're spinning the cage, it comes six times and everyone's like so excited.
That's
everyone's new party trick, I'm telling you.
I know, it's a great thing to make bets on. So the secret's out if you listen to this podcast, but the cage of a sparkling wine bottle, six twists will get the cage off. So if you need to make a quick bet or you want to make a quick buck, next time you open some bubbly, look at the person who's next to you and say, I bet you I can know how many twists it's going to take. It's like an old Tootsie Pop ad.
I was just thinking that.
Okay, so let's get into hosting a tasting. What we're going to talk about mostly today is hosting a tasting at home. So you and your family members, you and your friends. And what we'll try to focus on is how you can host in absence of someone like me, somebody who's going to facilitate the tasting. But then we'll add in some tips and tricks of how, if you did want to have somebody guide you through, your wine tasting could be enhanced or a little elevated. So let's do it.
Awesome. Well, so I have a plethora of questions, but I'm going to start with what is like your secret? Like what's your secret to hosting wine tastings? Not every secret that you have, obviously, but what is the best way to like get people interested? Because sometimes people just want to come over and they just want to drink wine and like chat, but how can you like elevate that experience?
So it depends on the group that's coming over. Sometimes I have friends come over and they roll their eyes at me if I want to open more than one bottle of wine and really taste it. They just say, pour me a glass and let's do something else. Let's hang out.
Everyone's like, oh, it just tastes like wine.
Yeah. Hey, I get hints of grapes in here, which is totally fair. Know your audience, right? Know if you are setting up a wine tasting, you should probably communicate it in advance to the people who are coming over so that they then get on board before they're there. But I always like to make sure that I have a plan going into it. So especially if I'm hosting people and I'm not trying to be a full-on wine educator, I will give them the heads up that I want to do a wine tasting and then kind of gauge their interest. How long do they want to spend doing it? Do they want to devote time directly to wine tasting, or do they want to sip some wine while we do a different activity? Or do they want something to be really specific? I want to try wine and cheese or wine and food pairings. Mm. And once I have that understanding, I can kind of craft it. It's also super important to know somebody's budget and what kind of wines they typically drink and what they absolutely hate so that you don't, for example, do a tasting of a bunch of different Merlots and have somebody walk in the door and just be like, I hate Merlot. so that's helpful too.
Absolutely. And I think I have a bunch of friends who are not red wine drinkers like I am. So I would have to exactly know my audience. So my next question is, how many people would you say is necessary to host a wine tasting? Like, how many is too many and how many is too much?
That's the same.
How many is too many and how many is too little? I'm definitely keeping that in there. I'm not
Ask
going
me
to repeat
again?
myself. That's
Yeah, that's a great question. You can do it just by yourself if you wanted to. It can be a little lonely, so if you're going to do that, just FaceTime me and we'll do it together. But it's really fun to do as kind of a quasi date night with your partner, like a date night in if you wanted to,
I
or
love
you could do
that.
it with a small group of friends. I think it gets a little unruly when you get too many people in a place and you can't have one surface that they're all either sitting at or gathering around. If you had, for example, a kitchen island and you could fit like eight people around it, keep it to eight people. If you have a dining table that fits four people or a coffee table that, you really have like four people who can kind of cluster around it, then I'd keep it to whatever spaces you have because it's fun to experience it with whoever you're doing it with. So I'd say think about your space, think about what's comfortable, because you do want to create kind of an environment where the tasting takes place.
Totally. I also think that if you have people who haven't seen each other in a while, then I can see the unruliness going crazy because people just want to have that conversation. So I think going into it, maybe making people, like, if, say, if you have four people, for example, if everyone brings their own bottle, have everyone research it, and then from there, everyone actually like has some kind of accountability, like, oh, I know this is my wine and we're all gonna share kind of a thing.
And that's a really good idea, Michelle. If you don't want to necessarily have to orchestrate the whole thing, you can tell your friends or your invitees, everyone bring a bottle of wine and do some research so that you can share more about it. It doesn't have to be extensive. They don't have to put together a PowerPoint presentation. They can simply say, I grabbed a Chardonnay from California, and the winemaker actually is a third generation winemaker. And these are some of the tasting notes I found on the website. So you don't have to do a crazy amount of research. But most websites for wines or wineries will have what's called a tech sheet. And if you are bringing a wine to a wine tasting or if you're hosting one, you can generally go online, find the tech sheet for the wine, and it'll tell you what you need to know about how the wine was made, the grape percentages in the bottle, if it's not 100% Chardonnay or something like that, for example. You can see how it was aged in oak or stainless steel, the year in which the grapes were picked, and usually a little story about the wine too.
You're blowing my mind right now because I am always wondering how people know the percentage of grapes and how it was made, and I didn't know that a tech sheet was a thing. So now I need to start going to these websites and trying to figure that out.
Yeah, especially for your favorite wines. If, say, you get a wine and it says, just where it's from, like you like Cabernet from Paso, for example. But if you go on the website, you might find that in addition to Cabernet, there's a different kind of grape in there, or there's more specific examples of how that wine was made that you can kind of relate to other bottles in the future and say, oh, you know what? I really like wines, for example, that are made from mostly Cabernet from Paso that are aged in new oak. And that's a really specific way for you to ask for what you want. So those tech sheets can be really helpful.
That's really good to know. I'm gonna definitely keep that in my back pocket going forward. Okay.
Yeah.
My next question is, so if you are hosting a wine tasting, say like you have everyone bring a wine, like that's just the example that we'll use right now. How do you know what kind of food to have out? Because obviously if people are drinking, you don't want to starve them and have everyone just drive home.
That's definitely true. Well, first and foremost, make sure there's plenty of water and make sure people are drinking water throughout. And that will help mitigate the effects of alcohol. It'll slow them down. And so, especially at a wine tasting, when people don't realize how much they're drinking, it's good to make sure everybody's safe and responsible. So, plan for the night to go a little longer than it needs to, just so that people aren't driving if they can't. But you can, first and foremost, you can kind of assign categories of wine, right? So you can tell someone, hey, can you bring a Chardonnay? Hey, can you bring a Sauvignon Blanc? Can you bring a Rosé? Can you bring a Cabernet? And give them some freedom for what they bring, but you can give them themes, categories, wines from Spain. Can you bring a wine from Italy? And you can get as specific or as broad as you want. But then what I recommend, first and foremost, pizza's delightful. Like literally always have pizza. No one's going to complain, even if it's not a good pairing. But what you can also do, and I do this very often in the wine classes that I facilitate, is I make a pretty robust cheese plate. And it's not just cheese, right? It's cheese and fruit and dried fruit and nuts and meats like sausage or prosciutto and some veggies. And so you can kind of taste the range of wines that people bring with those different things on a cheese board or a charcuterie plate, really. And you can see what people like, what pairings go well together and what don't. And on those tech sheets too, you often get an idea of what each wine might pair well with. Mm-hmm. So for example, if you told someone to get a wine and said, "Could just go online and send me the tech sheet or tell me the wine that you're getting so I can go online and look at the tech sheet," you can also kind of compose a menu based on what the winemaker or the winery suggests those wines would pair well with. But my go-to is always like a robust cheese and charcuterie plate.
So basically have your bases covered and make sure you have plenty of cheese, water, fruit, crackers, all that kind of stuff, so that way that you can kind of taste and see what pairs well with everything.
Yeah, and what I often do too, this is a little bit of an elevated, here's your first like, oh my gosh, moment. Take notes. Sometimes, and I will link this so that you can see this recipe, but I often make a focaccia loaf, which is kind of a olive oil based Italian bread, just really simple, like a sea salt and maybe rosemary, but even just a
sounds
sea salt.
Lovely.
I'm going to make it for you. Perfect. First, it's a great palate cleanser in between wines. So if you're trying a couple and you kind of need a cracker or like something starchy in between, focaccia is really filling. It has a good amount of fat in it because of the amount of olive oil you add to it. And it does kind of elevate things. Oh my gosh, homemade focaccia. It doesn't have to be homemade, but you know, people dive into bread baskets at restaurants.
Oh, yeah.
At a wine tasting, it's no different. You put that bread on the table
right now.
I know.
Totally a bread basket girl.
I am a bread basket girl. In fact, with my closest group of girlfriends, when we go to dinner, we rotate in terms of who has to ask for another bread basket. So occasionally we'll be like, "Hey, it's your turn. I've asked already. You got to ask. We're going to have eight bread baskets while we sit here. You got to ask."
Excellent system. I appreciate that a lot.
Yeah. When you and I eventually go to a restaurant, when we eventually can do so comfortably, we will exchange responsibility and bread basket requests.
Perfect. Yeah, they're going to be like, "Who are these girls and why do they drink so much wine and eat so much bread?"
Because that's who we are, Michelle. The wine pro and the wino. We'll wear our sweatshirts.
They'll get it.
They'll get it.
Totally. All right. Another question. So so say you have all these people bringing their wines, and how do you know what order to drink those wines in? So you have everyone come, someone brings a red, a rosé, a sparkly white. Like, what are the plans in terms of the order of the wines?
That's a great question. And what you just asked actually gave me a reminder to go back to your original question about how many people. So when you're doing a wine tasting, assume that each bottle has enough tastes for about 12 people. So if you're going to have more than that, ask people to bring more than one bottle of the same wine, because otherwise it gets really difficult to try a wine when you only get a couple drops. So anytime I host a tasting, if we're not going overboard and doing kind of what I call a double pour, and we would do that if we have a few wines, but if we're doing a number of wines, so like four or five, I stick to a general rule of 12 people per bottle of wine. And that means by the end of the tasting, everyone will have had in between with 4 to 5 to 6 wines, 1 to 2 glasses. Mm-hmm. And then if you wanted to for your tasting, you could ask everyone to bring 2 bottles and then everybody gets to like take their favorite home, or everybody could have a glass of something afterward. But rule of thumb, 12-ish people per bottle. Anyway.
That's good to know.
Yeah. Anyway. So then what order do you do those bottles in? What you typically want to do in a wine tasting is work from lighter bodied to fuller bodied. And that, if you recall from the tastings you've attended with me, is just the weight of the wine on your tongue. So the viscosity of the liquid. It's a little hard to figure out without having tried a wine, but there's some general rules of thumb. So the reason you do this is because if you go backwards, the wines that are lighter embodied will be less interesting, less dynamic, and will start to taste a little bit more like water. And so you obviously want all your wines to be as exciting as they can be. So I typically start with anything bubbly. I would go white bubbly, rosé bubbly, and red bubbly in that order if you're doing all bubbly.
Okay.
After that, I would go white wine. And if you have a red bubbly, that's like the one kind of wild card. You could do it all the way at the end, or you could do it up front. Up to you.
Okay. I would like it at the end because I feel like it would be almost celebratory. Yeah. Like celebrating all of me. You're done.
You did it. Yeah. Have you ever had a red bubbly actually?
I think I've had one once, but it was years ago and I didn't appreciate it. And I think thinking about it now, I would like to try one again.
Okay, we're going to do one together. We'll do an episode on all things bubbles and we'll try quite a few.
Red bubbly also kind of reminds me of like a cherry soda, so I don't know how I feel about it. Like in my head, that's what I'm mm-hmm. thinking I would be tasting.
There are some great examples, so I'm excited to expose you to those. Right. But anyway, so I would go bubbly, then white, then rosé / orange. We'll talk more about orange and rosés and the different styles of wines in another episode. And then last, I would go with reds. And you can do a quick search online to determine which reds are lighter bodied, like a Pinot Noir or a Gamay. And you can see which wines would be red and a bit fuller. So Cabernet, your OG, your favorite, or something like a Syrah or a Zinfandel. So making sure that you do your lighter bodied reds before your fuller bodied reds. And that's the general order I'd keep things in. But if you have any questions, you can always reach out to me and I'll order them for you.
So would you say that, like, even if it's like a super, like if it's more of a medium bodied white, is that still lighter than a light bodied red?
It is. It's not necessarily lighter, but when you have red wines, you start to encounter a property called tannin that you don't see in white wines. You get a little bit in rosé, you get some in orange wines, but with that tannin, it's that mouth-coating astringency, and white wine should come before that tannin because it will kind of set your palate off in a bit of a different direction than if you go through the whites and then through the reds.
Would you say that you should be eating something in between each wine to like cleanse your, or like have water in between each to cleanse your palate? And then my other question, so two-part question, is for the glasses, are you going to be like rinsing them in between each one? Like, how does that work?
You're asking all the right questions. And if I had points to award you, I would award you all of them.
I think you give me more points than anyone I've ever received points from before. So I appreciate that.
I apologize that they're not really redeemable for anything.
It's like tickets to Dave and Buster's.
Yeah. How many points do you have now? About 150,000. Cool. What are you saving them up for? Oh, they're not redeemable.
They're just there. In the
they're just there. And they're good for bragging. Like, I don't know how many Braille points you have, but I have 150,000.
I'll start competing against Matt. Go on.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you should. Oh, man. I don't know who has more by now. Okay. So the first question was about eating in between wines. That's why you got your focaccia, your bread basket. But yeah, you should have at least a cracker or something in between. Especially if you're eating wine with cheese or something else that's fatty or creamy, you do want to break that up with something that's a bit more neutral, like a piece of bread or a cracker, because wine will interact differently with different foods, but bread is pretty neutral. Anything kind of starchy is pretty neutral. But as soon as you start introducing creaminess or fattiness or salt, things get a little weird. So like a plain cracker, plain piece of bread or a bite of bread. And then, yes, definitely for water. Remember, we want to stay as hydrated as possible. I'm talking to the water queen right now, so I know I don't have to tell you.
Yes.
Okay. And then the second question, remind me what the second question was.
Oh. My second question was the glasses.
Yeah, rinsing the glasses out in between. Don't do that. If you are going in the order that I suggested, you're going from white to rosé to red, drink as much of the wine as you can from your glass, or if you don't like it, or if you're trying to watch how much you consume, you can pour it out. So here's another tip. Have a spit cup or kind of a dump bucket somewhere so that no one feels pressured to drink something they don't like. And also so they can dump out something when they've had enough of it.
I think that's an excellent tip.
Yeah, I always forget it, honestly, when I'm doing my own wine tastings. And then I'm like, all right, gotta sip up here. Gotta catch up to everybody else.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're going from lighter bodied whites and rosés to reds, then the drop or two that's left in your wine glass is not going to affect the wine that you put in it next all that much, unless you're going in the opposite direction. So if you had red in a glass, even if there's like two drops left, if you go ahead and pour white wine on top of it, you'll see it. It'll look like a pinkish, weird color wine. in that case,
easy rosé, right?
Easy rosé. Yeah, you just mix them together. You do you. Wine is only good if you like it, but that one gets me a little. Don't do that. Mm-hmm. I mean, do it if you want to, but like, don't do that. but so if you're going from red to white, just give your wine a little swish with you. I would honestly do it with like a little extra wine. I know that sounds weird and wasteful, but mm-hmm. if you're going from white to red, you don't have to swish it out. Just drink as much or pour as much out as you can, and then pour the red right on top. If you're going in the other direction, I'd pour yourself either like just a little spot of white to kind of swirl it rinse and then it rinse it out, mm-hmm. and then you can pour it. But I don't recommend ever washing it with water unless you're going to also then dry it, because water coming in contact with wine of any kind is going to react much worse than a couple drops of wine of a different style.
That's so interesting. Why is that?
Think about any beverage you've ever had that has water in it. Like the concept of it being watered down is just chemically mm-hmm. different than the composition of wine, which is like an alcoholic grape juice. There's sugar, there's acid, there's tannin, there's body, there's alcohol. Mm-hmm. All of that is not present in water. And so you're kind of just weakening your impressions of all of those different elements. So unless you're going to dry it out, don't do water. Do like a little extra swish of wine and pour it. Or if you're going from white to rosé or red, you can just pour right on top. Just try to get as much of the wine out of the glass as possible.
Okay. Yeah,
that's a great question. That's a really, really great question. I often correct people when we're in a wine tasting, when they're like, oh, I just got to rinse this. And I'm like, no, mm-hmm. don't. Just do it. Keep on keeping on. You've got it.
That's good to know, because that's something that I would do. Normally, I try to have like 3 glasses, but I think it's impractical to have that many glasses if you're going to have more than like 4 people over. I understand that you would be just pretty much using the same glass or 2 glasses. I think 2 glasses was reasonable, but more than that, it would be a little bit hard.
Yeah, that's another limiter of how many people you have is how much glassware you have. Because I do recommend if you're going to do a wine tasting, you should have a wine glass.
You got to do it in a wine glass. It's
gotta
like
do it in a wine glass.
Mule, not out of a copper cup. It's a
yeah, no solo cups. That's like where I draw the line. but it's funny that you said that, Michelle, because you were like, I try to do 3 glasses, and I immediately was like, oh yeah, you try to have 3 glasses of wine. Me too.
My normal everyday allotment. Oh my god, can you imagine? That'd be terrible.
Oh my gosh,
not terrible.
Yeah.
It would be delicious, but I
it
don't
would be
think
delightful,
that,
but it would also it would, be bad.
Yeah, very bad.
Yeah,
maybe on the weekends.
Yeah, definitely. All right.
So, my next question is: how do you know what else to like have? Like, what do you need to be prepared for? So, say let's give ourselves a 6 person wine tasting. Everyone's bringing their own bottle and you have to do the rest. So what is it like either give me like the top things that I need to have like prepared. And what do you think is like a nice to have?
Okay. So what you should definitely have is what we talked about already, some food, make sure there's water, make sure there's mm-hmm. glassware. So everybody should have a water glass and hopefully a wine glass or 2. I recommend doing food that can be easily eaten and not, you don't need like extensive utensils or cutlery yeah. or anything like that. So if you're going to do that, have some small appetizer plates that people can take food on themselves and make sure that they're getting enough and trying enough. I also recommend making sure you have something to chill wine. It could be your fridge. That's fine.
Okay.
You could also have a kind of a wine chiller bucket, and you can have some wine resting on ice if you wanted to have it all out at once. There's also, and we'll link these too, Michelle. There are these little discs that I get on Amazon, and they are really flexible little circles, and you kind of roll them up and put them in the top of your bottle, and they prevent drips when you're pouring wine. I can't tell you how many times I've poured a bottle of wine, it's gotten drips on like a table or like someone's rug or somebody's shirt if I'm reaching over them. So these mm-hmm. are like really helpful for not getting wine everywhere. And they're inexpensive.
I use my girl Ashley, the drips to sips.
Oh yeah. You can also
I love those.
Yeah. You can use, so those are perfect for like after you pour your wine and as you're pouring to catch drips. I also mm-hmm. am kind of clumsy. And like reaching over someone and pouring wine is just like it's bad news bears. Like this will mm-hmm. also help concentrate where your pour goes while you're pouring it. So yes, that. Yes to both of those. I also recommend having some kind of guide or like piece of paper and a pen so that people can take notes on what they're tasting, what they're experiencing, and what they like. Because by the time, if you have six people and you have six wines, by the time you get to wine six, everyone forgot that they're drinking wine. They don't remember it's a tasting. And then the next day they're like, I don't even remember what I liked there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that way people can kind of know what they're having ahead of time. And I think also having people bring their own wine, if you don't want to do research on six bottles, which does seem very difficult if you're not a wine pro like you are. For me, I think one bottle to have like responsibility for that one is reasonable. So I think other people who would be coming to a wine tasting that I would be hosting would also find that reasonable, and they wouldn't think that was over crazy. And also it causes a little bit of buy-in, in my opinion, to mm-hmm. have, oh, well, this is my wine now. So everyone kind of like, it's like kindergarten. Everyone's like sharing. It's like sharing.
It's show
time.
And tell. Yeah.
It's show,
tell and taste.
So, okay. So that being said, so I'm going to go over what you said and then I'm going to ask my follow-up question.
Okay.
So we have number one is easy eating food. Number two is water. Number three is glassware. Number four is something to chill your wine with. Number five is like a wine pourer and something to like stop the drips. And number six would be like a guide for notes.
Yeah, I think that's right. I think even if you didn't have all of those things, even if it's like you and your pal, so Michelle, like you and I each grab a bottle of wine, we plop ourselves on the couch, we're going to have a wonderful time tasting and talking about it. But this really does elevate it quite a bit. If you have, you know, some kind of planned snack, you have the glassware, and you have a setup that like really concentrates people around it. So I really love the thought of having something to write with and somewhere to write, even especially if you have like a, you know, a little area that's dedicated, not just like a blank piece of paper, but like wine number mm-hmm. one, wine number two.
Totally. So what details should everyone know about the wine that they're bringing? So say you're bringing a wine and you want to look it up to tell everyone or teach everybody about the wine that you're bringing. What are the specific details about each wine that you should know before bringing it?
That's a great question. So it depends on the level of detail you want to get into, but the basics, both that you as someone bringing a bottle of wine who's going to talk about it should know, and also what you should potentially make some space for on the sheet that you're having people record their opinions and responses on. You should know the name of the producer and the style of the wine. Those are not always the same, right? So the name of the producer would be like Josh Wine, and the style could be Paso Robles Cab.
I was going to use that example. Perfect.
I know. Yeah. And then it's good to know the grapes that are in the bottle, and it's not always necessarily everything that's on the bottle. So when you get that tech sheet, it'll tell you, is it all cab? Is it cab and something else? Mm-hmm. Labeling rules in different parts of the world will require a certain threshold of grape to be in the bottle in order to label it with that grape. But especially in the States, you can, for example, write, this is a Cabernet, but it actually might have small amounts of Syrah or Petit Verdot or something like that in that. So look at the text sheet and know what it is, because it'll help people understand what they like in wine a little bit more than just what's on the bottle. I also like to know the alcohol percentage. You can find that on the bottle too. It's helpful to know how much you're drinking, of course, but it's also helpful because sometimes people taste a wine and be like, gosh, I kind of have this burning in my throat, or this feels a little too intense for me. And you can sometimes correlate that to the amount of alcohol in a bottle. The next thing I'd say is where the wine's from. So in the United States, we have what are called AVAs, American Viticultural Areas. And whatever is most specific will be on the bottle, but the tech sheet will give you some more info on sometimes even the vineyard or how the grapes were harvested. So that's really interesting. And then the last thing is, I don't think it's cheating to do this, look on the tech sheet for tasting notes or aromas, mm-hmm. because those will help you, especially if you're new to wine tasting, those will help guide you. The power of suggestion is really strong.
It really is.
Yeah. And you can really guide people along if you have a little bit more of an idea. And so if it's your wine, you can also try tasting it beforehand. Mm-hmm. Even just like when you first get there, you kind of open them all, and whoever brought their wine, if they've never had it before, can try it and then see what they think. But ultimately, if you know the basics, then if anybody's really keen on a specific wine, they can really dig deep, go down a rabbit hole and try to find out some more details. But you don't want to overwhelm people.
Yeah, that's true. And I think people need to there's a very delicate balance between overwhelming people and people having a good time. So I think it's nice to have people have the accountability, have their own wine that they're bringing, but at the same time, making it like a fun environment that everyone can kind of relax and really like go. The reason that you're going to something like this is just to like have time and spend time with people while enjoying good wine.
Yeah. And I think one other thing that you can do either as a theme or just like a special add-on is you can tell people to find a story about their wine. And it could be any story. It could be, this is the wine that was always on my wine rack or my parents' wine rack as a kid. And so every time I see it, I think of my parents. Or it could mm-hmm. be, you know, the winemaker overcame some hardship and this wine is an accident, or this wine won a specific award when it wasn't supposed to. Like some kind of fun story too. Because as much as wine is about the facts, where it's from and how it's made and yada, 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 mm-hmm. so much of what I love about wine is the story, right? It's yeah. some combination of like history and geography and interpersonal relationships and language, and all that comes together to form the kind of poetry. I'm like waxing poetic, like the poetry that's in the bottle. No, and that's
you,
so
you're
cool.
really making me want to have a wine tasting right now, just because I'm getting excited about this.
Let's do it. I mean, you and I taste wine together very often,
very frequently.
We can just have like a bunch of friends together one day, and I will not necessarily have to be the wine educator. We'll have everybody bring their own bottle and share what they like about it.
That's good. It's like a potluck of wine, if you will.
A wine luck.
A wine luck. Ooh, trademark that.
Let's do it. A wine luck.
I am trying to think if there's anything else that is important. So I just want you to kind of talk about like the differentiation between your wine tastings and a self-done wine tasting.
Oh, that's a great question. And thank you. So when I host wine tastings, I get to know the person who's hosting. If I'm doing a private event, try to get to understand what they like, how flexible they are of breaking out of their comfort zone, because I think that's really important. Sometimes people say, I don't like Chardonnay. I never want a Chardonnay in my mm-hmm. tasting. And I'll push them a little and they'll be like, fine, just one. I don't want any. I only one. And then it ends up being their favorite wine of the tasting because they just haven't mm-hmm. known what to look for in the past. So I try to get to know someone's tastes. I build out a proposal for which wines we'd like to try. I help them get the wines. I send them, sometimes if I'm doing like a very kind of white glove service, I'll send them the wines in the mail. I'll send them all the snacks in the mail. I'll give them guides for mm-hmm. how to taste, printables, which we have, Michelle, that people can download if they want to host a wine tasting themselves.
Yeah.
Wine tasting guide. I'll send them some text sheets of the wines if they want. And I'll make sure that everything's set up for them. I also kind of keep everybody kind of on a flow in terms of time, so it doesn't mm-hmm. take forever. I can answer a bunch of questions that people have. And I think when you have someone kind of organizing on your behalf, we can get it to be a little more fun. So I like to do themes. So we could do like all mm-hmm. about Pinot Noir, where we try a bunch of different styles, or wines made by women winemakers, or wines from around the world. And that guarantees that you get a variety of different wines or styles that are different, so you can really taste the nuance between them. So I think that's mm-hmm. that's why bringing in someone who does wine education regularly can kind of elevate your tasting a little bit. And then the onus is less on you as a host to navigate and figure it all out.
Yeah, it makes it a little bit more relaxed because you have somebody that's telling you rather than having to have that responsibility or the pressure to do it yourself.
Exactly. And it's a bit like entertainment too. It's like you're bringing somebody in like, entertain mm-hmm. us while we drink. And I'm like, okay, yeah,
you poor thing had to entertain my drunk butt during my bachelorette
party. It was awesome. I sent you a picture the other day that I forgot I had taken a screenshot.
So funny.
And you and your friends had so much fun. And they were all so awesome.
And you know what? It's funny because I have a friend who is a Twisted Tea fanatic. This girl only drinks Twisted Teas, right?
Wow. So, that's such a throwback. Yeah. I didn't even know they still made those.
She's a mother of two. Just drinking Twisted Teas. I know. So she is very particular about what she drinks. And I remember her having the Gruet, one of your favorites.
Oh, one of my favorites.
She loved it. And she was like, I'm really enjoying this. And it was just like a phenomenon for her because it was something that she would never try on her own, but mm-hmm. to have it brought to her and like have the experience of you like kind of running her through all of the tasting notes and like just what what was about the wine. I think she enjoyed the experience and then like realized, oh, this is something that I could enjoy more often, or something that if I saw it at the store, maybe I would pick it up. So I think that's really good too.
I think that it takes the pressure off too, because if I bring wines to an event, if someone doesn't like it, it's not their fault and they're not offending the person who brought it. They're just saying, oh, wine educator, I don't like this wine. And then it's totally fine because I can help them figure out why they don't like it. And understanding what you don't like is absolutely part of the process of learning what you do like. So it's easy when I come into a situation to lead a wine tasting, I bring a bunch of different styles. I bring things people haven't tried before, because then you open someone's horizons. Whereas if you're hosting one at home without someone like me, you might not have reached for that weird wine on the shelf because you're like, I don't know what that is. No, thank you.
If it were up to me before you, I'd just have a tasting of Josh Cabs.
We should do that. We should do like side by side by side by side all the Josh Cabs.
Don't tempt me with a good time. Me, you, and your parents. We would love that. Oh
my God, because my parents absolutely love, they crush Josh. They crush it. When I was talking about what's that wine that's on my parents' wine rack forever, Josh, that's it.
I'm aware. When I went to your house, that's what they were drinking.
They were like, do you want some Josh? And you were like, do I want some Josh?
Did we just become best friends?
The best part is you were coming over to do an episode of Canned Wine Wednesday, if you remember. And they were like, do you want a glass of Josh? And you were like, yes. And I was like, wait until I do the can. Calm down, everybody. When I left your house at
1 o'clock in the morning and had work the next day because I needed to drive home.
First and foremost, good for you for being responsible. And second of all, yes, just to reiterate this, the first time Michelle and I met in person, we hung out for 10 hours.
That's a very long day. It's good times. All right. So let me go back to what I was saying before. So I think that what I really enjoyed about having the tasting with you is that it kind of like broke down the barrier for me in terms of a wine tasting. So I kind of knew what I was getting myself into. I mean, granted, I have done multiple with you, but having that experience makes it more comfortable on my end. So I think like knowing how you do it, I can kind of like take some things that I like or take some tidbits that I can like, oh, this is something that I would like to do for mine, or this is something that I necessarily maybe wouldn't want to do. But at least I like have the knowledge of like what the little things that you've taught me that I can kind of teach other people, or I can use wine that you've like used in one of your tastes and like, oh, this would be a good opportunity to retry this rosé or retry this bubbly. And I think that's a good way to like kind of like dip your toe in a little bit, is to take the tasting beforehand and then you can kind of expand to do it yourself, because it takes the pressure off a little bit and makes it more comfortable to host something when you kind of know what you're doing.
Well, thanks, Michelle. That makes me feel so much better about the classes that you've come to and the one that we hosted for your bachelorette. That I'm feeling all the warm and fuzzies.
All the feels today.
All the feels.
And I think anyone listening right now would also enjoy taking one of your classes. I think that just having your knowledge behind them would also give them a little bit more confidence if they're not familiar with wine. And even if they are, I think it's just a good opportunity to learn from somebody who has a different perspective on wine. So if I were you, this is a shameless plug to Brielle.
Check out her
wine tastings, and they're a really good time.
Yeah, I'd love to have you join. And Michelle, obviously I want you in the room at all times when I'm doing wine tastings, because you're so much fun to be around.
I'll just drink the wine the entire time. Sounds great. I'll be there. All right. Well, I think that's pretty much all we have covered for today. I hope that you guys kind of take these tips and can host your own tastings, or take Brielle's, take one of her wine classes and then do your own. So yeah, that's all I got.
Yeah, well, we're here to answer any of your questions about hosting your own wine tasting. I'm definitely here if you want to host a tasting that involves me, because you know I'm down to sip anytime. But yeah, we'd love to hear from you. How did your tasting go if you hosted one? What other questions do you have? Send us a message. Let us know how we can continue to help. And hopefully we'll see you in one of my classes soon. Michelle, you're coming no matter what.
I'm ready for it. Take care and have a good one. We'll see you next time. Cheers.
See you next time.
Hey, if you're a wino and want to learn more about wine, check out Brielle's business, Viva Livino, and sign up for a wine class.
And make sure to follow along on Instagram at The Wine Pro and The Wino for lots of fun wine content, and subscribe to us here. If you get a chance, we'd love you to give us a 5-star review. We hear it helps. New episodes drop every Monday, so we hope you'll tune in.
Thank you so much for listening, and we can't wait to sip with you next time.
Cheers!